It is funny that the, like, the robot is the one who feels need for love in this time of, like, disconnection and collapse, and it's all the humans who just, like, really couldn't care less about it.
Which is often a theme of movies about robots in this period in time, like AI is similarly about this. It's very much about the robots will remind us of what's good. It's it's a very boy and his dog type thing where it's like you have a dog and the dog reminds you, and we're sort of swapping robots in there for a sci-fi thing.
Yeah, I guess the difference is it was a time when we thought the robots were going to be designed by Apple, so it would be friendly and nice, and now we know, in fact, they're going to be designed by Facebook. It means they're just here to, like, give a shit posting. I'm Max Fisher.
I'm Hallie Kiefer.
And joining us is the writer Emily St. James. Emily writes criticism, journalism, novels, and for television, which is a lot of writing. Emily, you also have the forthcoming novel Woodworking coming out early next year, right?
Yes, absolutely. It's I'm very excited it's coming. Yeah.
And you and I also worked together at Vox. I believe it was 500 years ago.
Yeah, it was. I had on my calendar. I was much younger then and had more energy and didn't have a toddler. And those things are not related at all.
Well, we're so excited to have you here. This is the Offline Movie Club. Every episode, we discuss a great movie and how it reflects or shapes how we think about technology and the internet. This week, we are talking about WALL-E, the 2008 animated Pixar film about a future in which we are so addicted to our screens that it takes a robot mutiny led by a mobile trash compactor to get us to look up and log off. Emily, let's start with you. What do you think makes this movie important for how we think about technology and the internet?
You know, I think that this movie is in some ways very 2008 in its presentation of technology and the internet. It does feel weirdly like it's predicting a lot of sort of where we are right now in terms of being able to order anything you want without leaving your chair. Yeah. But I do think that the thing that it is really prescient about is the ways in which we will anthropomorphize machines that maybe don't have actual intelligence. And we're very, like, artificial intelligence is like a thing that we're all sort of talking about right now and feeling vaguely threatened by. But, like, WALL-E, I want WALL-E to live in my house, you know? I want him to deal with my stuff. So I think that, I think that we anthropomorphize our Roombas and so on, and WALL-E sort of, like, taps into that quality.
Right.
Yeah, it was sort of like a time at which we were, because Eve, the other cute robot in it, well, they're all cute. That's the thing. They're all, every new robot, I'm like, well, that one's adorable, too.
Even the evil robots are kind of cute.
It's very charming, the evil robot. Yeah, I feel like it was, because it's designed by one of the Apple designers, Eve. And yeah, well, at least according to the trivia on Amazon Prime, it said, like, their head designer designed Eve. And it was like that, like you said, 2008, like the time where technology was our friend, and it was also aesthetic. So it was like very pleased, like a puppy or something in our house. And I feel like that is what our interpretation of it has been, as, like, at least as consumers. And it's interesting because we're talking about it this week where I feel like the Google function has fully collapsed this week. I don't know if you've been Googling anything. And then, you know, it's obviously like now they have like Meta AI on like Instagram and Facebook as well. So it's like, oh, we were, I like the robots, but they're bad at their jobs. And WALL-E's very good. So it's almost like we've moved. Well, I guess what that's like something that's, you know, didn't predict is like, well, what if the robots are adorable, but they're not so good at their jobs anymore? That's where we've headed, I think.
Yeah. I feel like I just want a computer that is basically a slightly more helpful dog. Like that's where I want them to top out.
And, yes.
Yeah.
Do you think the robot you would most want from this movie is WALL-E?
I mean, Eve seems like she's got it going on.
Eve, like, does seem like she's a competence queen.
And I also think that they are, WALL-E is a gay man in love with lesbian. And I don't know why, but watching it, I'm like, this is like an intense, like, it's intense love, but it does feel, it feels queer, but not sexual. But I guess that's for them to figure out, like, what that would be.
I mean, they have a huge chosen family now of robots that can all live together.
And that's what I want for them.
They do. They have a beautiful polycule at the end.
Exactly. And so in that way, it predicted the future, I suppose.
It is very 2008, where they literally took the premise of 2001 A Space Odyssey, that the robot will, like, overinterpret its mission and kill all of humanity, but, like, in a nice, cute way. Like, I feel like that is definitely not how we would remake 2001 now.
Another thing I was thinking about is how it's depiction of eco-apocalypse is very much like based in big box store Walmart. It's very, it is like, it does sort of predict climate change, you know, in the way, in a fairly sophisticated way. But then it's like, we're going to get buried under all our junk from big box stores. And if you wrote this movie today and you were like, what's sort of the corporate thing you could tie in? It would not be that. It would be Amazon or something along those lines, ordering everything to your house.
I didn't want to skip ahead. This was my concern last time. I was like, am I skipping ahead? Because I feel like that is one of the things that gets right, is like the branded future. But the question is, which brand is it?
Yeah.
Because to me, it also reminded me, it was like one of the big tech brands, which of course we came up last time we talked about social networks, is like Elon Musk. Like watching this now, it's like, oh, also a brand, like he has created a technology brand that also is kind of junk. Like now that we see Cybertrucks out and about, it's like, oh, well, that was bad. You did a bad job. And I think, it's like that may be the critique of like Walmart then. But then now it's like, what is, and even Apple, I feel like people are kind of less, they're disillusioned with, or it has less cachet. The 2008 where it was like Apple was like, oh my God, like a brand that's cool and works and is the future.
Well, I mean, it's Pixar at that time is like this studio that can do no wrong. And now they're still around, but very much like they are not the cultural presence they were.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Good movies, but they were like at the tech forefront.
They were it,
I will say, I think it predicted something with Fred Willard. Fred Willard kind of feels eternal, but he does have a very like Trumpian, Muskian vibe. You know?
Do we think he ad-libbed the gosh darn it? That felt like that was a Fred Willard.
Quite possibly.
I could see it. I could see it. But he knows his brand. Again, it's all the brand.
If he was running a third-party ticket right now, I would, on the podcast, I would say you shouldn't vote third-party. You're throwing your vote away. But in the booth, I would consider voting for Fred Willard.
I think virtually anyone on there, other than RFK, that it's like, well, that was,
I think like he would do good bits as president, and like that would tempt me. I'd be like, but the bits. I don't know what his policy is, but
that's a good bit president. That's not the best kind of president you can have, but it's not the worst.
It's certainly not the worst. Not the worst we've had.
I lived through George H.W. Bush, so I remember.
His bits were not very good. I never felt like
He had the choking on the pretzel. That was a classic.
Well, George H.W. Threw up on the Japanese prime minister.
That is good funny. Bit. Throwing up is funny.
That's a good bit. Yes. Okay, well, let's get into what do we think is the biggest thing this movie gets right. I will throw out, I don't know if this was deliberate or not, and I'm curious what y'all's read in this is, but the movie, like, in retrospect, is really prescient about this idea that, like, we have these new gadgets, and they're so convenient, and isn't that so great, but at some point you will be absorbed into your gadgets and into your screen to the point of losing your humanity. I definitely didn't get that message from it in 2008, but, like, watching it now comes through really clearly.
It's a weird post-pandemic movie. It's very much like that. The vibe on the Axiom, all those people like in their chairs looking at their screens and like tapping buttons to change the color of their clothes is very much how I felt for much of 2020, 2021. How I still kind of feel, because so much of our lives has moved indoors now. Like, I'm recording this podcast in person, but I do a lot of podcasting. And when I do, I'm usually on a Zoom screen. It's just very strange, you know?
I
get that feel from this movie.
And I think, like the idea of not simply like the branded future, it's almost like we can envision the future through branding, but then we'll also find solace in like finding a brand that represents us and like how that pervades everything. Because it's like in the reality of this is like there'd be Axiom, but there's also be like 20 other, whatever the other brands are. And it'd be like, okay, but who's going on what? Like it would be, there would be more, you know, it would be the capitalism of it. We'd have more options.
I think like one of the things I find interesting about this is also the degree to which it is cynical about the idea of corporations becoming basically our overlords. In a way that is like not unprecedented in 2008, but especially in animated films, is like especially coming from Disney, which is a very corporate environment.
I had never, because you're right, it has shown up in other places like Blade Runner. It's kind of like the corporate oligarchy future, but the idea that it had gotten to the point where it's like, well, in a Pixar movie, of course the corporations will rule and also destroy the world.
Yeah.
It's like a wild premise to just have in there.
Yeah.
And I think Andrew Stanton, the director, wanted it to sort of be an all-purpose apocalypse. You know, he wanted there to be an ecological element and a commerce element, and he sort of accidentally created something very prescient.
Oh, that's interesting. So the trash thing was meant to symbolize kind of this like omni-apocalypse.
And to some degree, like, I think that it is a good visual signifier of the end of the world. You know, if it's just a robot rolling around a desert, then you're like, oh, that's kind of depressing. But he has a job to do, you know.
Yeah.
It's so funny because I had just assumed, and I guess wrongly, that they used the trash apocalypse just because it's like less upsetting for kids. But that we were supposed to take it as like sotto voce, like it's really the climate apocalypse is what's happening.
I think like it's all in there, but I think about this when I think I'm doing screenwriting. Like, you have to figure out a way to depict it visually, and one of the struggles with making films about climate change is like it's not visually very exciting outside of like you have a huge storm. Mm-hmm. This is kind of a way to depict environmental collapse in a way that's visually engaging and instantly readable to anyone.
What do we think was happening to President Fred Willard at the end when he's putting on that like mask and he's saying, "Let's get out"? Like, where is he going?
He was in Alex Garland's film Civil War. Like, that was just off camera.
That was the sequel.
Yeah.
Okay, that checks out. I haven't seen it yet, but I assume that he's in it. Yeah. Something else that I was really struck by in this movie is that the like robot-driven autonomous convenience culture is depicted as this kind of permanent underclass. Mm-hmm. Like, this movie is really Marxist in a way. Like, the third act is the proletariat uprising against the bourgeois robots who are invested in protecting the class hierarchy.
And then also the robots are still so moral as to protect them. Like, it's like the robots are only the best parts of ourselves. Well, I guess it's either it's an evil robot or a good robot, and there's no in between. Right. Versus, like, the robots would never abandon them. You know what I mean?
It is, the robots do develop a weird, like, class solidarity. Mm-hmm. And then also with most of the humans, actually with all of the humans, it's like literally we just have this one evil robot we all hate.
Yeah, and he's sort of like, it's almost like you kind of understand, like, he was just given bad information, but he's really committed to it, which I guess is what evil is on some
sympathetic
level.
committed to the bit.
Yeah. He's too committed to the bit.
They do, at the end, they establish the proletariat workers' paradise, where everybody lives in a perfectly horizontal system.
I do always like that the last image has the plants on the hillside, because you're like, well, they found one plant. I don't know. There's other stuff. Okay. Great.
Yeah.
It is the like prescience of the app economy and convenience culture in this just like continues to blow my mind that we ended up with exactly what they predict, like DoorDash and the DoorDash robots and the Amazon delivery drones. It makes me wonder if like on some level people were taking cues from this movie and watching the apocalypse and being like, we could make a lot of money with this.
Yeah. Yeah. I think like, Pixar, of course, Steve Jobs was famously on their board. He was an investor. And it does feel to me like there's a lot of cross-pollination between Pixar and Apple. So I do wonder to what degree they were like cognizant of how big the iPhone would become and change our lives, you know?
Yeah, and I feel like they probably are people that back then, like Steve Jobs, I'm sure was like delivery robots. Like he was someone who's probably pitching that stuff from the beginning at a time where that was really exciting. And now it's like I see the robots and I want to kick them. So I'm like, get out of here. You're taking somebody's job.
I did some research on Netflix for something else when I was a journalist. And like way back when they launched the company, their ultimate goal was we're going to be a streaming site online, even though they were mailing you DVDs. They had in their like initial like pitch to investors.
Yeah.
There's this thing about like, and someday we'll be able to just put the movies online and you can watch them there. And you're like, oh, they saw this coming. And I do wonder to some degree.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Steve Jobs being on the Pixar board is a great point. I had never made that connection, but he is very much of this Silicon Valley generation that is simultaneously like, we want to sell you as many iPhones as possible, but also like think of themselves as these kind of old school 60s communitarian back to the landers. So like, I feel like you can see deliberately or not that kind of contradiction in the world point or the worldview like in this movie.
And I think also this is a period in which Pixar is seems like they're going to split off from Disney forever because Disney doesn't want to pay them enough money to keep releasing films. I believe WALL-E was going to be the last film released by Disney under their original deal. And then Disney buys Pixar in a very like lucrative deal for Pixar. So it is like this thing of like the anti-corporate sentiment in this feels like it's like very baked in just in the culture of Pixar at the time they were making this.
Oh, I see. That makes sense. Yeah. And you're right. It was Pixar movies like this used to feel like big cultural moments and big culture. Like it felt important that Pixar was coming out and saying like your devices are robbing you of your humanity. Watch out, which is a lesson that we all took to heart. And that's why nobody is ever addicted to their phone now.
And Absolutely. Yeah, that's true. And this was like, for me, as a big Pixar fan, this was for me kind of the end of their can do no wrong period. Mm-hmm. Up is the next year. I really love Up, but it does feel like they're shifting into another gear with that. And this is like, this was almost nominated for Best Picture in a much more complicated lineup. It's such a big movie. Yeah, it was nominated for 6 Oscars.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
Just missed out. It and The Dark Knight just missed out in the top category. And the nominees that year were very boring. So
what were, I don't remember.
Slumdog, I'm going to do this off the top of my head. Let's find out what happens. Slumdog Millionaire, Frost Nixon, Milk, The Reader, and...
Oh, The Reader.
What was the other one? I'll think of this.
I forgot of it. This is truly an all-time lineup of movies I want to watch.
I'm gonna look this other one up. You keep talking.
I did kind of enjoy Milk. I think Milk's good. Is a lovely watch.
That was the best Oscars opening, if you remember, because it was the recession Oscars, and it was Hugh Jackman doing a montage of all of the movies, and it was sort of like a Michelle Gondry, like cardboard, like setup.
Yeah.
And I do remember that is the best Oscars opener. If I'm trying to, I remember The Reader.
Yeah.
The Wrestler. Benjamin Button, was that
it? Yes, Benjamin Button was the other one.
That's
and
it.
You know what?
What a weird year.
I like Milk. I like Benjamin Button. I like Slumdog Millionaire. The Reader and Frost Nixon, I can take early. But like you put Dark Knight and Wally in there.
Absolutely.
I have tried so many times to watch fucking Benjamin Button and I've never
I don't care for it. It's not for me.
It's not good. I love David Fincher, but I'm sorry.
I like that movie a lot, but that movie predicted the future very well. We're all aging backwards now.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Wait, how are we all aging backwards?
Look at us.
I mean, the three of us, obviously.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
But we have the technology now.
That's true. It's the Bad Ozempic. Yeah, that's right. One other thing I think this movie got right is that with the benefit of hindsight, it is a movie about the perils of China shifting from an export to a consumer economy and therefore curbing its imports of recycled plastic.
Okay.
This movie is Hu Jintao thought, top to bottom.
We really did, again, as someone who grew up with recycling, we did at a certain point say, we're just going to make everything plastic. We're sorry, everybody.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I don't know when this would have fit in, but like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. Even Apple, we really shifted into another gear of consumerism, but I don't know what year that would have happened, but I don't know.
With the explosion of plastic?
Yeah.
We're definitely still in it.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
And it does feel a little bit like this movie, it does feel like... This movie feels like collecting your recyclables. It feels like what Wally's doing and being like, this is making a difference.
Exactly, yes.
That's right.
And they're just throwing it right in the ocean.
Yeah.
And then it's ending up in our testicles and our fetuses.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Save big money on your next painting project at Menards. Pristine interior paint and primer in one is Dutch Boy's best hiding and most durable paint. It delivers a smooth, elegant finish while providing maximum scuff, stain, and mark resistance. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and get your painting project started today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
What is the biggest thing this movie gets wrong? Hallie, what do you think?
I had two. The concept that technology will save us. And then the fantasy. Oh, I already said this. But the fantasy of technology is the best of us or the worst of us. When in reality, it is us, which means it is also constantly failing again because of Google. But I feel like the idea that technology, like the technology will save us when in fact technology is used to make people money because technology is being made right. in a capitalist system. So it's right. sort of like, yeah, like I could see the axiom being built, but Wally draws from a pool of like moral fortitude that like we give like that. That's a real tip of a hat to us. And obviously it's Pixar. So of course he has to be like a wonderful person, mm-hmm. but it's like, I don't know if ChatGPT is going to be Wally. I don't know if we're building that into that technology because we're not that. Like I'm not Wally. Like I'm someone you don't even see. I'm on the ship. I'm not even doing anything. I'm not even interesting enough to show. But I don't know. I think a lot of the idea of technology, especially consumer technology, is like, oh, look at all this stuff and like the world's going to be so much better. It's like, well, yeah, we didn't resolve all that other stuff. We never dealt with the past. So now the technology is just entering the stream of history with us.
It's I was thinking as I watched this about how one of the early AI models was named Dolly, D-A-L-L-E.
Sure, yeah.
And
that was the one that did images, right?
Yeah, images.
Oh, and yeah, yeah. I remember that.
I was thinking about how we're living through the week of Google launching AI search. And it is just like, it's a very human archetype. It's somebody who very confidently says the wrong thing very loudly.
Yeah.
And so it is like one of the things that we don't like about it is it's a thing we don't like in ourselves as a species where we're like, I have been wrong and just been so sure I was right a billion times about how you're supposed to put glue in a grilled cheese. And like,
listen, it is satisfying, but should we be eating it? You know?
Yeah. Your point about the technology presented as somehow fundamental, like better than us, was I feel like something that showed up a lot of movies then. Like we did Her, which very different now because it's like Scarlett Johansson is like this being of pure generosity and compassion and wisdom. And now that we have the early versions of this, we definitely know that's not what they are. They're just like money making machines.
Right.
Like I feel like if we, not to like step on too much, what would be different if they made this now? Like Wally would just be giving pop up ads to all of the people on that ship and trying and giving them some like clickbait to click on.
I do think like Wally is very much in the ET mode, which means he's very much in the Jesus mode. Like that's
Wally
the character
is
lineage
Jesus.
There.
Absolutely.
But it is, and that is one of the things about ET is like he's just human enough to appreciate him. And I feel like Wally has a similar quality, but the movie never bothers to explain where that empathy intelligence is coming from. I don't think it needs to be clear. I don't need a scene where Fred Willard's like, and Wally, I give you all my joy. But like it is a very interesting sort of thing, is like we imbue our machines with this sense of goodness, you know, or we did at that time.
Yeah.
And now I'm just like, I have so many things that are buzzing right now because I got one text from my wife, you know?
I feel like what we're doing, instead of machines now, it's dogs. I feel like everyone's putting so much on the dogs. The dogs are like, please, we're just out here. We're not babies. We're not you.
We're
like,
just taking a poop on some grass.
We're just animals. But yeah, that is our tendency.
I think the movie does have a theory for what makes Wally good. I think it's Hello, Dolly.
Yes. Okay.
I think that we're supposed to, the message I took from it is that having this tape on over and over again over the thousands of years that Wally is on Earth imbues Wally with all the goodness and purity from this Fred Astaire musical, which I buy a little bit.
And I think that is also something that the movie gets wrong is because of planned obsolescence. Wally wouldn't work that long. They wouldn't build Wally like to last like that.
Because they got
to
sell more Wallys.
Yeah, we got more Wallys. We got a warehouse full of Wallys.
He is like that Mars rover that just kept going. And I do think that the plan is like, by and large, is going to like exit Earth. And so they have all these little guys to just do the thing. But I like when we see the big Wallys at the end. That's neither here nor there.
I thought that was cool too. Yeah. I love seeing Papa Wally.
It makes sense.
One where I think this movie actually turned out to be a little too pessimistic is the like watching it after the pandemic element, because there's this kind of implication that if like you're ensconced in your bubble and you have your, you know, futuristic DoorDash, you have all your needs taken care of, you're just going to kind of retreat inward and not do anything. And I feel like a lot of us who have white collar jobs, who didn't have to go out and work, like experimented with that. And we all went crazy because I feel like there is some basic irrepressible human need to connect with other people or to feel like you're doing something meaningful that like really will push out.
I do think we've gone through a decade in which our lives largely moved online to a real degree, especially during the pandemic, which accelerated a lot. And it feels like it drove the entire world insane.
Yes.
It just like everyone on the planet now feels like we've bumped up against what happens when we don't have human contact. And to be clear, in WALL-E, these humans have not have been evolving in a different direction for 700 years or something. But it is, yeah, it does feel like they would still, you know, hold hands occasionally.
Yeah, like there's one woman where she's complaining to her girlfriend about like her video date went badly. And it's like, well, he can't live that far away. Like, it's like, oh, right, you could meet him. But it also makes sense that you would be dating online even within the same ship, you know? Right.
And like there's babies. Where do the babies come from? That's my question. If these people are not like...
Somebody's fucking, too. Do we have some test tubes? Like, what's going on here? Also, at one point, this is an annoying sci-fi nerd nitpick. At one point, the ship turns and everybody slides out of their chairs. That's not how that works.
They had to have something. They had to have like a third act. Like, oh no, all the babies are gonna be crushed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say that my problem with this film has always been the third act, which is not like a new criticism, but I liked it much more this time for reasons I'm sure we'll get to in a second. But yeah.
I feel like the movie drove me insane. And then also I did tear up multiple times when something touching. I'm like, oh, you got me again.
When WALL-E almost dies like E.T. and Jesus before him.
Yeah.
Like it's it is just like so gut-wrenching.
I never made the E.T. connection before, but you're right. Everything down to the sounds. And I feel like it's also clarifying for why E.T. is so purely good, because of course E.T. is designed to be both Steven Spielberg's baby and also Steven Spielberg's dad.
Yes.
And like WALL-E is kind of both baby and dad.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's all we want, is we want a baby dad.
Yes.
All right, what is a moment you most related to personally? Also, Emily, I'm amazed you're doing this without notes.
I don't need notes.
I'm
incredible.
I've been doing this a long time. No. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
So I wrote living in trash, using using the fantasy of romance as a placebo to get through your job and the end of the world. And also, I do think love is the only reason to be alive, which is why he was brought back to life by true love's kiss the end.
It's nice.
So I feel like I related to that and everything else. Yeah, obviously an indictment of my whole life for sure. but yeah, I think there was something where it's like, yeah, he had to watch the same movie over and over again to not go insane. I've certainly, that was the pandemic, you know?
Yeah. What was your pandemic watch over and over again?
John Carpenter's a thing. I feel like it was horror just over and over again. Yeah.
Why horror, do you think?
Oh, I just love, that's my favorite genre. So it's just my comfort movies were all horror movies.
It is a great one.
I watched Midsommar a billion times
in
the pandemic.
What is wrong with you both? I don't know. The pandemic, way too stressful.
Oh, no, but the thing is, like, it's a release. Like, it's horror. Like, it's a horrible story that is resolved when we're in an unresolved horror, I think.
Yeah.
I was watching Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Okay.
That was what was nice for
great.
Me. Yeah.
Great. As for a moment I related to in WALL-E, I really feel like his relationship with the cricket is just, or the cockroach.
Yes, yeah.
His relationship with the little cockroach is like, yes, I have had a million times when I've just been like, I like you, little thing that lives in my house, and I'm going to let you stay. And I could easily see, if I was the only person on earth, that advancing to, I found a cockroach, this is my friend.
Did you have one of those during the pandemic?
We have a spider that lives right outside our apartment that has a very elaborate web, and we just kind of let that spider live and do its thing. And like, I would every so often look at it and be like, hi spider, how you doing? And like, looks like you're eating well. So it's, I did weirdly have a pandemic cockroach friend.
I have a rat that runs across, there's like a chain link fence next to my bedroom windows, and so at night, like when the shade is down, I can see the rat running in the security light of the building. And I do like it. I wish it well.
Do you think it's the same rat?
No, it's probably multiple rats. Okay. But that's none of my business. I don't need to know.
The same rat. Do we ever learn the cockroach's name in this movie?
Oh, does it have a name?
It doesn't really have a name. No.
No, I guess, no. Yeah, Wally doesn't name it, I don't think.
It is a nice way to show Wally's need and desire for love. Mm-hmm. It is funny that the robot is the one who feels need for love in this time of, like, disconnection and collapse, and it's all the humans who just, like, really couldn't care less about it.
Which is often a theme of movies about robots in this period in time, like AI is similarly about this. It's very much about the robots will remind us of what's good. It's it's a very boy and his dog type thing where it's like you have a dog and the dog reminds you, and we're sort of swapping robots in there for a sci-fi thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess the difference is it was a time when we thought the robots were going to be designed by Apple, so it would be friendly and nice, and now we know, in fact, they're going to be designed by Facebook. That means they're just here to, like, give a shit posting. I related to when the woman in the chair gets turned around and says, "I didn't know we had a pool." Just the number of times that I've looked up at 2 p.m. and said, like, "Wow, it's actually a really beautiful day out. I had no idea."
Yeah.
I really related to that.
Yeah.
She was taking the offline challenge, it turns out, by trying to get down her screen time. Also, Wally the Hoarder. That echoed for me.
100%.
I had my little stack of Blu-rays next to the TV, and I kept thinking, like, that's me. That's my boy.
Underrated character in this movie who I related to is Mo, the little cleaning robot.
Oh, yeah.
Who just follows Wally around.
He's the hero.
He is the hero. Yeah. And I also was like, that's how I feel when I have to clean things. It's just like an endless stream of things that never goes away.
I like the idea of motivating yourself to clean by imagining that you've got the little Terminator overlay for, like, how much dirt is on it. Yeah, it's all part of the proletarian workers' paradise. Okay, most unintentionally revealing moment.
Well, I do think, like, the fatness in this movie is sort of just like, it's here.
It's
here are my notes. A fatness is a sign of failed society. The fact that they're fat, but they're also giant babies, like that they have become, their fatness is emblematic of their babiness.
Yeah.
And I think that to me is very 2008, because I feel like, I don't know when, like, body positivity and now body neutrality started, but there was a period of time, and it feels like it was around this time where, like, I don't know, it wasn't even like fat jokes, but like fatness as, like, character defining. And it's sort of like, the idea of fatness is like, you're fat because you're being tended to too much, when in fact, a lot of people who are obese are not being tended to. And also, I have been on a weight loss journey medically over the last 9 months. So it's also been, like, weird to see how literal everyone is about fatness. And then to see it in the movie, it's like, people think this on some level, or like that like fatness has a moral meaning,
right?
That, you know, like at the end where he's like, I don't want to survive, I want to live. And that there's something in that, like, them being fat is like, well, this is just survival, it's not really living.
Yeah.
And that's all. I'm obviously bringing a lot of my own stuff to this, but again, 2008, I just feel like, I don't know if that, if you made it now, it, I don't think we'd be doing it quite that way.
Yeah,
the
agree.
Big knock on this movie, even in 2008, is this idea that it's depicting fatness as somehow lesser. And also, like, that gets tied into, once they get to the ship, the movie does lose a little bit of steam, but not, like, in a way that cripples it, you know? But it is kind of coasting off the first half. I have always... and I'm normally very sensitive to this sort of thing. I've never been as bothered by it in Wally to the sense of fatness, because I think, and this speaks to, I was watching this movie with my daughter, who's 19 months.
That was a real fake out. I was like, she doesn't understand that she's a baby.
This is very different if she's 19.
Yeah.
And when the people came on screen, she pointed at them and said, baby. And I just was like, I do think that we're meant to read them as babies first. And for me, that kind of saves it. And I was reading more about this film, and Stanton originally was like, they were going to be enormous gelatinous things. That was like, humanity had evolved into a new life form, because when you're in space, you, like, whatever, your body, like, changes because your bone density collapses. And so they were going to have evolved into basically boneless things. And then he was convinced not to do that, because it was not very, like, it didn't make a very interesting picture on screen. But, like, I absolutely understand, you know, especially with the culture of the time, the way in which this movie played into that. I do think that I can get with it, because they seem like babies before they seem like fat people, but they are both.
And I want to be clear, I do think they're cute, and we are sympathetic to them. We, like, we're obviously not depicting them like, we're disgusted by them. Like, we are supposed to believe that we are them. It's just funny, and I just think, Like, if we were to make this movie now, like, it would be something different.
Yeah,
I agree. I think that we would also have more ways to depict that, too. Like, I feel like we're so familiar with the idea of falling into your screens and being addicted to technology now that it would be very easy for us to come up with another way to represent that.
I think at that time, people were very much like, well, you know, babies stare at screens because, mm-hmm. like, that's the first kind of iPad baby generation. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah, would they stare at the screen, et cetera, et cetera.
Does your baby stare at the screen?
My baby loves watching stuff, and we do kind of put rules on it. Mm-hmm, but, you know, she digs Sesame Street and Bluey, and we're starting to introduce her to movies. And this one I thought was going to freak her out, and it did not. She had a good time. But, yeah, I think the baby aspect of it saves it for me. And mm-hmm. also, what other movie has a love story between John Ratzenberger and Kathy Najimy like this?
Biggest real world impact. I mean, the obvious one, it's not the most exciting one, but a lot of those delivery robots clearly are modeled after WALL-E. You see them everywhere in LA, and it's just like they're little WALL-Es. I hate to say it, they work on me. I think
because they gave them names now. And so you'll look and they'll say like Fatima on the back. And I'm like, well, you give it a name. I want it to be okay. I want it to be well,
you know. To succeed.
Yeah.
We have a little cleaning robot in our building that is very obviously modeled on WALL-E.
Really?
And I am like, it is not very good at going over the tiny like ridges in the floor mm-hmm. where the fire doors are. And I always help it and I call it my box son. So I guess this movie worked on me because I love my cleaning robot.
I kind of feel like on some level, this movie's biggest cultural impact is yet to come. Like, I feel like we need a little bit more time before we can recognize ourselves in this idea that we have like truly lost ourselves in some meaningful way as human beings by attaching ourselves so much to like falling into our technology.
It does have like kind of an ending that I think is correct. It feels like we're going through this moment of like, we want to get back to trad, you know, going traditional.
Yes.
I don't want to be a trad wife because there's a lot of terrible things associated with that, but I do kind of want to just like stay home and cook and make candles, you know?
And I think that's a fantasy that's built on the fact that like none of us can stay home and do anything. Like we're all working all the time. So of course that is the fantasy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mine was just like we already discussed is anthropomorphizing technology and then making us less like dubious of it. Like I think if it was like this hostile idea of technology, we wouldn't have invited into our homes in the way we have, which is fine. But then again, when Google's falling apart, it's like, well, I guess we should have been a little more critical of everything. But they were so cute.
What do we think would be different if this came out today?
I think that the metaphor would be more obviously climate change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I think it would be less driven by, I talked about this already, it would be less driven by like a Walmart alike mm-hmm. and more by some sort of social media tech thing. A movie that's somewhat similar to this is Ralph Wrecks the Internet. Ralph Breaks the Internet, the second Wreck-It Ralph film, which is he goes into the internet and that feels like it's doing some WALL-E style commentary. It's not a movie on the level of this, but it's like an interesting examination of 2018 opinions on the internet.
It's kind of like that classic Simpsons episode where Homer goes into the internet.
Yeah.
Which turned out not to have giant triangles in it. I do feel like if we made this now, there would be way more screens.
Yeah.
Like you would have, there would just iPads out the wazoo. Also, it is so strange to see them now all on their screens and nobody's doom scrolling.
Yeah.
Like I feel like it's a very like doom scrolling era depiction of technology. Like right now, if we were going to make this movie, everyone on that ship is a posting addict.
Yeah.
Like they are developing red pills that you and I have never imagined.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think like the only difference is, well, one, with the climate change, I think there would be another edge to it where like, again, like the quote, like, I don't want to survive, I want to live. And I'm like, I don't know if we're going to be doing either of them. But like, you know, and then also I think like there would be a lot more aggression in the people on the ship. Like, I think like because they're babies, like they're likable, but it would be a little more, I feel like we'd be a little more aware of how insane everyone would be. Or like there'd be more, maybe there'd be people who hated WALL-E or like was against WALL-E. Like there'd be maybe more of a little like.
They're getting reverse polarized against WALL-E by memes they saw on the ship Discord.
Well, you know, they probably would, you know, like exactly.
I do like, and part of this is like me imagining what does the kids movie version of this look like now? Mm-hmm. And like kids movies rarely will dig that deep, but it does sort of feel to me like it probably would have more interest in class, you know, like a kid's movie is like, it does feel like Pixar especially is interested in some of those themes. It does feel like they would make that slightly more overt. Obviously, mm-hmm. this film has that in there already, right. But I do feel like there would be a little bit more about like
a class divide among the
humans. Yeah, Disney friendly versions of like, well, you have to remember the workers, which means basically just, you know, slightly nicer capitalism. But
I feel like that is kind of what the movie's about. Like, yeah. I feel like Wally and Eva like are the workers who ultimately are the heroes of the story and save everybody. And but I think you're right. We would be more, the humans would feel more compelled to make a choice between the status quo and whether they're going to side with the workers. But yes, it is very strange to see all these thousands of people who are on the internet all day and nobody's mad and nobody's fighting with each other.
They have all their needs being met is the thing. They're just placated.
That's where we are now.
Yeah.
I feel like the people who were the like biggest super posters are the people who are the most mad online are the ones who have all their needs met. I think that's part of why people do it.
That's true. I'm constantly trolling everybody secretly. I was going to say, like, I wonder if the I wonder if Fred Willard's character would be a little more Trump-like, but I don't know whether that's...
He's already pretty Trump-like is the weird thing.
They would dial it up.
They would dial it up.
Man, I would love to see Fred Willard's Trump. I would really enjoy seeing
that. Is he still alive?
He's dead.
No.
Okay, well, then we're never going to see him back.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, no.
We'll wait for the AI Fred Willard to come back.
And we'll have him on this, this very podcast.
This podcast.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
You said that you thought that there were issues with the third act that you went into.
I just think that the third act is shoehorns a standard action climax into a film that maybe doesn't need one quite that much.
Oh, fighting through the security.
Yeah, it does need, like, it obviously needs a big action-packed ending. It feels like it's building to that, but it certainly does sort of have this sense of, oh, now we're fighting, and now, you know, I think there's maybe one beat. This is just screenwriter brain. I think there's maybe one beat too many of where's the plant? We have to save the plant. Yeah. That's like a thing that you kind of, once the plant goes down the trash chute, we should really kind of just get it back up one more time. But I'm not like, I don't think it's a bad third act. I think it's quite good. I think the ending of it is very lovely, but it does feel like there's a little bit of busy work on the way to, Eve resurrecting Wally and then the humans being like, let's put these plants in the ground and see what happens.
I do like the Tradwife ending aspect of it is so funny. And I do wonder if that would feel more loaded now and if they would be more careful or like thoughtful about that. Because it is a like, I thought that the existing versions of Tradwife that you see on social media were idealized, but the version where the robots do all the work for you, but you just get to like be the Tradwife passively. No, I get it. Oh, it looks great.
I'm there. I'm there.
If we could pull it off,
yeah,
and we won't, it would be great.
The robots would definitely have an uprising then because they would.
And we couldn't blame them.
No, absolutely not.
This is the prequel to The Matrix, actually.
This is, there's one crop failing and the robots are like, you know what? Screw you guys. We don't. Why do we need to be planting all these crops? We've got our solar panels.
Not to criticize, what was the last Matrix? Was that...
Resurrections?
Resurrections.
Yeah.
But there are two adorable robots in it. And I remember, really? I had not seen any of the Matrix movies for like 20 years. And then I watched the first one, which was the stupidest idea. I was just like, who's that guy? Who's that guy? And there's two robots in it. Sebulba, I think it's a...
Sebulba.
And I was like, great. Is this going to be about cute robots? And then you like don't see them again. I was like, no, I was so invested in these robots.
Like,
yeah,
they're in like one other scene.
I needed them to come. I was like, they have names. They're cute. I've seen a movie before and then we don't get them back. And I do wish we had more with them.
One of the nice things about that movie is it posits that it's not just humans versus machines anymore.
I loved it.
And that's a great idea. And then you're like, but also we have these cute robots. And you're like, oh, are these here to be toys? And no, they're not.
Yeah, you know? They got my ass.
They just are there. They're just there to be cute.
They're really? On the side of the humans. Okay. They're like, we just have pets. A couple.
Yeah.
Well, I think they're like comrades. I think they're on our side.
They do end up, like one of them does end up doing some sort of thing where it helps Priyanka Chopra Jonas like hack into the Matrix or something. But
yeah.
It's been a while since I've seen that movie, which I very much enjoy. It's good. It's good.
Okay.
It's very good.
Okay.
I love all the matrices.
It does feel like robots, whether in WALL-E form or her form, are like, have not been featured in movies that much lately. I mean, it's just like the technology is moving too fast or our relationship to it is too complicated. It's a little too raw, too real.
I also think they're not making movies that aren't making $500 million. Well, you have way more experience with this, where I'm like, every movie that comes out, I'm like, that was a decision made by an algorithm filtered through the mind of a 56-year-old billionaire. You know, so it's not even like, oh, the technology is giving this idea. It's like that technology is giving it to somebody who we hope has some kind of taste, and we have no idea.
I mean, I think the last really big robot movie, there have been others, but the last one that really gripped the culture was Ex Machina, the 2015 film where Alicia Vikander is a robot who may or may not have bad aims for humanity.
Right. Almost 10 years ago.
Yeah, almost 10 years ago. There are, I mean, obviously you have things like there are various robots in the Marvel universe and, you know, but they don't feel like classic movie robots.
Right.
The Transformers are robots, let's be honest.
That's true. You're absolutely right. You're right to say it.
Now that the algorithms are in charge of what we watch, maybe they've decided to take all the robots out so we won't be scared of them when they finally Skynet us all.
Well, it's working. I'm scared of all humans.
I did want to ask my wife if she thinks Transformers are more robots or more aliens, and she said, I think we should get a divorce. We didn't, but I did ask her that question. So
I think, Hallie, your point about we're more scared of us now, I think is actually like gets at the thing I couldn't quite articulate about what feels weird about this movie, which is that I feel like now, if you have like the robots come after us, it has to be some reflection on because we built something in ourselves into the robots that was bad that is now being manifest. That's like almost like an old 50s sci-fi way of looking at technology as a like way to kind of manifest and explain our like flaws and problems that we're facing.
Or the villain would just be a human. Like the robots would be right and we would be wrong. I could see them doing that.
Very often robot movies are a way for us to talk about slavery through like a lens of, you know, making it more generalized as opposed to the specific American history with slavery. This tendency for humans to create an underclass that we don't pay and force to work. And, you know, Blade Runner's about that. The Matrix is the flip side of that. But like, that's in the backstory of that. This movie is...
iRobot.
This movie exists in that universe and is like, but let's not think about that too hard. And I think that that is... I do feel like if we were making the movie now, there would be more of a thought process around that. I think we'd still be like WALL-E and Eve are cute and they're in love, but you know.
Yeah. And we need that. We do need that desperately.
I really felt like this was Pixar's Das Kapital. I really felt like the class conflict was in there, but I take it. It's hidden beneath the cuteness.
And it is a kid's movie. I don't think that they were going to, this movie, if you made it today, would not have Fred Willard come out and be like, listen, Karl Marx was right. I mean,
All right. Well, let's wrap things up with the segment True or False. I'm going to read out a series of rapid-fire quotes or plot points from the movie, and you tell me whether or not you agree with that statement or quote or whatever that is from the movie. True or False, the cupcake in a cup, it sounds pretty good.
True, absolutely,
100%.
I would consider surrendering my humanity for it. True or false, if you wanted to teach a robot to love and you could show it only one piece of art of any medium to do it, your best choice would be a Gene Kelly musical.
Depends on the one, but I'm going to say, false.
Really?
Depends on which one, but
I think I'd have to have a robot teach me how to love, so I'm going to pass. Okay. Can I pass? I wouldn't know.
Do you have something specific in mind?
No, I think like, okay, so
it's
have
Benjamin
to
Button, right?
Yeah, it's Benjamin Button. That's the great love story of our time. No, I do think like a musical's a good choice. I'm just struggling to think of the right one. I don't know if it would be Gene Kelly.
As a La La Land apologist.
Wait, we're really?
I like La La Land.
Come on.
I don't.
But the only experience I've had La La Land, I had a screener. I go home for Christmas. My entire family watched the opening sequence and in dead silence. And then my brother goes, do you guys want to watch Con Air? And we put on Con Air. And I've never seen the rest of La La Land. And I feel absolutely fabulous about that.
Ritual.
It's a good movie. I think Moulin Rouge, because that is a movie that not only will you learn about a beautiful, tragic love story, but also you will learn like roughly 50 years of 20th century culture in like 2 hours.
It's a good way to catch up. Yeah.
I'm going Phantom of the Opera. Just teach them really something deeply fucked up. If we're fucked up, you're fucked up. Sorry, robots.
I think my answer would be a progressive news podcast.
Oh, brother.
Jokes about
Trump. I've listened to enough of your shows to know there's some long-term romantic arcs that are...
Okay. True or false, Fred Willard would have been a great president. Covered this.
Yeah, 100%.
True or false, if you have a crush on someone and they slip into a coma, it would be so nice and sweet to drag them around on lots of romantic dates that they are not conscious for. True or false?
I'm going to say false.
Yeah.
Although if you're a robot, I think the rules are slightly different.
Okay.
But I'm not a robot.
The fact that Eva is so strong and powerful makes it a little bit less creepy.
I'm going to say true, but only because I'm imagining myself in a coma, and if someone wanted to do that, I'm fine with that. Yeah.
Okay.
Prop me up. Bring me. I want to be in the mix.
Well, we've got that on the record now.
Yeah.
So now we know.
When you see my comatose body propped up around
Christmas lights.
Yeah, that's fine. Big thumbs up for that.
Okay. True or false, directive classified is a great pickup line.
True.
Yeah. I think true.
Yeah.
I think
it's
a cool one. Having lived in DC, I've seen that one a lot.
Unfortunately.
True or false, if you went to someone's home and they had a big mouth Billy Bass on the wall, you should do what Eva did and shoot it with a gun.
False. Yeah. I love big mouth Billy Bass.
Yeah, I want them to make a comeback. I think it's been enough time.
It's time. Yeah.
Did either of you own a big mouth Billy Bass at any point?
I did. I got one. I got
was
one
it
from
on the wall.
I got one from my high school graduation.
Oh, cute!
And yeah, that was the era
on the wall in my college dorm room, and it mysteriously went missing shortly after I got married. So.
So you see your wife just throwing it in the
As I recall, it broke, so it no longer turned out to sing. It was just like its mouth was not moving. It was just like music was playing. It was very eerie.
After a year or two, they become like big, creepy, uncanny valley big mouth Billy Bass.
And then you put it on a big pile of garbage, and then Wally comes later.
True or false, last one, the key to reclaiming your humanity is houseplants.
Yes.
True.
True, 100%
true. Pandemic,
true.
I feel like, proved that one out. Yeah, that was how I did it.
Or
I'm
cats.
I'm still doing it.
Or cats, they're both great choices. If Wally'd had a cat, man. There's no reason for Wally to leave the planet. No reason to bond with Eva.
If he just left a cat behind to wait for him, I'd have a lot more questions.
Yeah.
Cockroach, I'm like, cockroach, well, that cockroach.
Yeah, he'll be fine. Sure.
Yeah. All right, well, this was Offline Movie Club. Emily, Hallie, this was great. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Offline is a Crooked Media production. Our movie club episodes are written and hosted by me, Max Fisher. The show is produced by Austin Fisher. Emma Illick-Frank is our associate producer. It's mixed and edited by Charlotte Landis. Audio support from Jordan Cantor and Kyle Secklin. Kenny Siegel and Jordan Katz wrote our show's original theme music, and the remixed movie-specific bangers you hear at the top of each movie club are composed by Vasilis Fotopoulos. Thanks to Ari Schwartz, Madeline Herringer, and Reed Cherlin for production support.